Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
All right, Frank, we could start in a number of places with tonight's episode. I want to start with what ended up being the build as the main event, the final match on the show, Bayley versus Alexa Bliss, sold as or presented as Bayley trying to take on her arch nemesis Bliss. It was the biggest example we've had yet of Bayley's in-ring work since her long layoff. They went about 15 minutes, Bayley getting a win after ringside shenanigans, which was the theme for the night, which I know you on Twitter are geared up to talk about, Frank. But first, I want to get your take on Bayley in this match, and also Bayley's work on the mic earlier in the show, building kind of setting up this match.
I thought Bayley looked good in the ring. I actually believe she has a chance to beat Bianca at Extreme Rules. In fact, it might even be a good idea, you know, just to switch things up a little bit, just to validate her comeback and give her a run with the title. I mean, you could always go back to Bianca at another point or go in another direction. As far as the mic work, I'm not there with her yet. It's still a lot of railing on the local crowd, and, you know, she's from the area, so let me be the heel and say nasty things about, you know, about my hometown so I could be a heel, and let's pick on the local team. Let's pick on the Sharks, you know, so I'm not really there with her mic work, but I guess in totality with the in-ring, I guess I can deal with the entire package, if that makes any sense. I thought Dakota Kai actually cut a better promo, except her, like, inciting the what chance, which I'm like, somebody should have given her the memo that that's, like, the worst thing that's happened in pro wrestling, okay? You know, I thought she actually cut a better promo than Bayley did, but, you know, in totality, I ended tonight's show happy with what I saw. From Bayley. By the way, I didn't notice if they actually billed it as the main event. I'm going through the show and I'm saying to myself, but what's the final segment? What's the main event? And then I forgot that it was, Lexi against Bayley. Did they mention it, that it was going to be the main event throughout the night? I'm not sure.
Only right before it happened. I'm pretty sure Jimmy Smith used that terminology. I think it was before they went to the video package. I think he said something about, you know, before we go to our main event, here's a recap, something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, main event is sort of, is the last match on Raw really the main event? If it wasn't advertised ahead of time, was the main event actually Seth Rollins challenging Bobby Lashley for the U.S. title or Kevin Owens against Austin Theory? Probably.
Yeah.
In the actual way main event is usually used. But that said, I mean, the final match. I mean, I went to a lot of Hulk Hogan WWF house shows, and Hulk Hogan was the main event, and he was on a private jet on his way home during intermission. The idea was, you know, Hogan got – sometimes he was doing two dates, but sometimes he just wanted out sooner. And merchandise sales were crazy after Hogan matches during intermission.
Yep.
So the main event, quote, the last match ended up being Randy Savage against Tito Santana or Greg Valentine in an IC title match. Some good stuff in the main events, but – it's not a term that has a super strict definition.
Been there, done that. Actually went to a house show at Nassau Coliseum in 86, and I think they were in the middle of the Hogan Orndorff program, and he went on fourth, you know, and then whatever main event, maybe it was Savage and Santana in the main event. But I'm not worried about it. I'm not sitting here making a big deal about it, but, like, you know, if that's the planned final match, I just would have liked to have seen it built up a little bit more. You know what I mean? I just would have liked to have seen it been talked about a little bit more rather than, you know, at the last minute. But, you know, it's still overall fine. I mean, I thought that they did a good job. I was also, and I know you didn't bring this up, but the Alexa Bliss part of this, you know, you wonder what's in store for her. You know, they very lightly talked about, you know, what she used to be. you know, being the champion and things like that. And, you know, you saw glimpses of her old personality. And it just got me wondering if they're going to go in that direction at some point, because I think, you know, I mean, I was a caller with the Torch when she was in the middle of that run. And, you know, I think that's a much better Alexa. So that's something also to take note of, you know, as we go over the show tonight.
I was thinking that the Bliss and Company and Bayley and Company promo, to me, it didn't get me excited about the main event. I thought that Bayley still just seemed like she's not all that into it, kind of going through the motions on cruise control. And I mean, she's fine, you know, doing that. I mean, it's fine. But it's not inspiring. I just think she's sort of, you know, ha ha ha, we're going to take over. And
yep.
It's just,
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
I'm not feeling it.
It's very, okay, we're heels. We're mean girls. So let's just say mean things so that we could be, you know, the bad people. And it's not, you know, I had hopes for this coming out of SummerSlam, and I just haven't seen anything that's really inspiring me to want to continue to see this group. I mean, they gave them a name, Damage Control. What does that even mean? You know, it just doesn't. It's not hitting. And that's why the first thing, you know, that I mentioned was, okay, you know, let's rail on the local area. Let's rail on the local sports team. I mean, we've seen that a million times. I mean, the only thing I'm thankful for tonight is that we didn't get a reminder of This Is Your Life, Bayley. Okay. So there was a little bit of a victory here, you know, that we didn't get any reminders of that horrible segment in the history of Alexa Bliss and Bayley. But yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
It's not a very, it's not a very inspiring group. It's not growing together the way I expected it. You know, it was one of those deals where they were kind of thrown together in the beginning, and I was like, okay, let's see how this works, you know? And it just hasn't blossomed the way I had hoped. So, yeah, totally with you on that.
I think, too, well, I was thinking, who does Bayley remind me of on her promos right now? And I would say it would be Jeff Jarrett, when he would go through the motions on his promos, you know, WCW, WWF, TNA, there were times when I felt like he was kind of like, all right, guys, let's do it. And the camera would roll and he'd go into his Jeff Jarrett character. And there'd be the ha ha ha's that are just sort of built in, but don't really have any, you know, emotional resonance that feels authentic to it. And it's just sort of like a two-dimensional wrestling character. And that's, I mean, Bayley's capable of more. And I don't know if she just isn't given the material by the writers and Hunter, her heart's not in it, or she's just trying hard and coming up short, whatever it is. I said it last week. I'll say it again. I keep waiting for sort of a breakout performance where this get a little more sense. I think I don't have a problem with her being the main event challenger for Bianca Belair at Extreme Rules, but she's not feeling like somebody who, if I'm WWE management, you know, Paul Levesque or whoever, you know, making these decisions or having influence, I'm not looking at this going, wow, you know, now that she's back, we really want to position her, you know, protect her and position her for top, top matches. I think she's just one of, you know, she's going to be a top tier player because of her legacy and they'll utilize her, but I don't think she's coming across as a difference maker. I think she was fine in the ring, but I'm at this point intrigued with Alexa Bliss because I feel like Alexa Bliss being sort of just blah might have been, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but it might have been deliberate, like, you know, building up to something that really is a transformation for her. She came up short here. What's next? Because, you know, carrying around the doll just because of merch royalties, it's not a character. And her promo is kind of half-hearted too. I mean, they put forth a good effort in the ring, but yeah, I want to start with it because I think Bayley was somebody we're all waiting to see come back, and I think forever people have been waiting to see Alexa Bliss's next incarnation. And I wasn't encouraged, you know, but excited by what I saw from them tonight. But I think there's room for both of them to get better. I actually have probably a little more hope right now or faith in Bliss over the next 3 months, blossoming into something more. And I'm a little fearful this just might be what we get from Bayley.
Well, I'm with you, and I'm totally more intrigued by the Bliss part of this than I am by the Bayley part. You know, I mean, like I said, I'm still fine if they want to do a title change. I mean, it's something that could branch into something else. Maybe they go to Alexa Bliss after that. I don't know. That's 50 steps down the line when I'm not worried about right now, but I am more intrigued. And it could be, well, two things. One, with Bayley, she could be one of those people that really does benefit from the heavily scripted promos. I mean, you talked about this when Triple H took over. You know, if they're not heavily scripting people, you might see some people that don't benefit from that. And maybe Bailey's one of those people. You know, maybe with the training wheels off, maybe she's just not comfortable. Either she's not comfortable or she's not into it, like you said. As far as Alexa's concerned, you know, you mentioned it being deliberate. It could be a way to segue back to the old character. In other words, you know, you kind of have her do this plain, you know, bit that she's doing right now, which honestly, I don't even know what it is beyond carrying the doll. But that makes you appreciate the old character better when it comes back, if that's in fact the way that they're going. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there as a possibility. So, yeah, I mean, they might have very subtly been planting a seed in our head that Bliss is really going to be the one that that comes out of this whole thing and benefits as a more significant player moving forward.
All right, well, let's pause and introduce the show and give out the phone number and email and then move on. We should have an on-site correspondent calling in soon to tell us what it was like in the building also. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, September 19th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter. You can read nearly 1,800 back issues of that newsletter dating back to the late 1980s when you're a VIP member. We have a VIP website, ad-free, with a super deep library of cool content, hundreds of retro radio shows from the 90s. I'm a few years away from being able to say thousands of back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, and also a ton of podcasts going on 20 years of podcasts, all available on demand, along with new content on a daily basis. And I'm also the editor of PWTorch.com and the host of a variety of podcasts, including this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, which follows Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with a live stream, which then is available to download later at your convenience on your podcast app or from our website. And also the host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. This is the post show. That's the podcast. And tomorrow, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net scheduled to be my guest co-host. So look for that on Tuesday night. Got a lot to talk about and catch up on with Jason. And also I host a variety of VIP exclusive shows like the Wade Keller Hotlines, post pay-per-view roundtables, and the Fix with Todd Martin, and everything with Rich and Wade. So go VIP to hear all the podcasts I'm part of and the array of other podcasts that VIP members enjoy on their Apple Podcast app and just about every other podcast app out there where you're compatible not only with just about every podcast app, but also Patreon and more. The other voice you heard so far on the show is Frank Pediani, and he is a PWTorch.com contributor and PWTorch VIP podcaster. Frank, great to hear your voice again. Great to have you in the co-host chair.
Absolutely, Wade. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me. I'm glad I'm doing this again within the span of like a month and a half from the last time I did this with you. There was a little bit of a gap before that just with, you know, work and life going on. But I'm happy to be here again and look forward to talking about Raw tonight.
Well, Frank, tell people about your contributions to PW Torch.
Absolutely. So on the written side, I'm doing the premium live event, the WWE premium live event, Hits and Misses. It started with SummerSlam, so there's one up for that, and there's one up for Clash at the Castle. The next one, obviously, will be Extreme Rules, so check that out. It's a lot of fun writing it. It's just, you know, an opinion piece that, you know, I grade each match, hit or miss, and then give it a final score at the end of the night. So I enjoy doing that. And then on the VIP podcast side, Pro Wrestling Then and Now, where I go with a rotation of co-hosts, go back and look at old shows and, you know, talk about where the wrestlers were at the time and where they went. And, of course, we review the shows in roundtable form the way you guys do it on the post-pay-per-view roundtables. My most recent episode was with my personal friend, Justin Girardi. He joined me to talk about SummerSlam 2002, for which he was in the building. So we got an in-person perspective and a lot of little details about that show that I didn't know from a in-person perspective. So it it helped make some things clear. So I hope you had a chance to check that out. I've got a few shows lined up in the hopper once I work out the details. I'll announce what show and who my co-host will be on social media. So look for that. And Wade, let me double push those old newsletters because it is a real joy to go back and read some of them in preparation for doing those shows. You know, I could see what your viewpoints were back then, you know, and Jason and everybody else. I've seen Jason Powell as a reader write in comments. So that's kind of cool to see, you know, going back and checking that out. So, yeah.
There's anyway, even letters from Tony Khan writing into the reader's page.
Oh, my God. I haven't come across that yet. I haven't. Yeah. That's probably like mid-90s, right? Like more around the Monday Night Wars. Okay, good. I got to you know what? I'll spoil it. One of the shows that I'm looking to do is Halloween Havoc 97. So he might have been a reader on that. So, yeah, Pro Wrestling Then and Now and Premium Live Event Hits and Misses Report. Check it all out.
Excellent. All right, well, we're going to continue analyzing tonight's Raw and also talk about the Survivor Series news with War Games replacing the champ versus champ format, which I'm happy about. So let's give out the phone number. It is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. So if you're live streaming the show, you can call in and participate. You're invited to do so on future episodes if you downloaded this one after the fact. You can find our show, the link to the live stream, on our Twitter account, at PWTorch, right around the time Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown end. You can also find a link at the top and bottom of my TV reports covering Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. They'll give you those reports. Will catch you up on what happened on the show. And you can also get my opinion on key segments in those reports, but it also has the phone number, link, and email for the post shows. And finally, you can just go to WadeKellerPostShow.com and navigate to the live feed. Lots of ways to find us, and we invite all of you to join us live when it works out for your schedule. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad, if I didn't mention that. That flags you on our switchboard, so we know that you want to be on the show. Otherwise, you can just listen to the background on your phone until you're inspired to push 1. You can also email us at WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. All right, so we have some callers on hold. We're expecting to hear from Nico, who is in the building in San Jose tonight, and we'll get our on-site viewpoint, what happened in the building. Curious to get details on the crowd reaction for Bobby Lashley and Seth Rollins, how the crowd reacted to Dexter Lumis and Miz. And there's one other – oh, and I guess Bayley as a hometown wrestler against Bliss. Are some of the key questions that I have. We'll probably find out what happened either before or after the show, too, in terms of dark matches and stuff. So we're anticipating his call anytime. He just emailed and said it'd be a few minutes. So in the meantime, give us a call or email us, and we're going to begin with area code 585. I believe it's a Rochester, New York area code. Go ahead and state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hi, Wade. Hi, Frank. This is David in Farmington, New York, just south of Rochester.
Great. David, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Well, you know, I caught bits and pieces of it, most of it. One thing that stood out to me, that the main event seemed a little bit flat towards the end, and I totally agree with what you and Frank were saying about damage control, and I think this is a case of the sum not really being greater than the parts. It seems to me like Even when you're looking at Belair and Asuka and Alexa Bliss, it seems like they've been stripped of their individual personality. It just seemed like six wrestlers out there, six random wrestlers out there going through the motions. And you know, Io Sky, you know, her personality seems to be gone. Dakota Kai, why are they there, and why should we care? And the point I have to make here is there's nothing personal that we are invested in damage control. What are, you know, why are they, other than wanting Belair's championship? Look back in the show a little bit. Dominic Mysterio, look at the heat that kid had. He just barely opened his mouth, and he was drowned. Not in a very long time have I heard anyone drowned out by boos that much, especially just standing there. He barely opened his mouth. It's because that's a personal issue between him and his father. Look back at the heat that Seth Rollins and Matt Riddle have right now. They got personal a couple weeks ago in the interview, and I remember a long time ago listening to Jerry Jarrett and Jerry Lawler and some of the Memphis wrestlers. They said in the office, Jerry Jarrett had a sign about on his wall that said, personal issues draw money. And we're seeing it with Riddle and Rollins, and we're seeing it with Mysterio and the Judgment Day and Rey Mysterio. If these girls, I mean, there's potential there, but they've got to amp it up a little bit. We've got to have a reason to care about why they're there and what they're doing, you know?
Right.
Yeah, good points, David. I want to follow up on your comment about Dominic. I've thought this has been working pretty well all along. I've been a fan of Dominic's body language. I thought the way that Ray and Edge were celebrating at the last pay-per-view, while Dominic stood off to the side observing them and growing resentful of the fact that he helped them win, but they were celebrating with each other and not initiating thanking him for help, was that final straw that broke his relationship with his dad. I think the what might have been a little inartfully scripted, it didn't feel like a kid venting. It felt like a writer writing last week in that video package. Overall, I thought his performance was good. And I thought today, walking out to the ring, hanging out with Rhea Ripley, Ripley putting her arm around him, and him just looking smugly self-satisfied with, I mean, just his facial expressions tell a story about what's going on with him and her. And it's working. I mean, I you know, what, we got to have a bigger sample size than what happened in San Jose, but boy, did Dominic seem to enjoy that moment. I'm not sure how he feels about Ripley saying, you need to talk louder to the last row. It's possible somebody underneath the hard camera's view was urging them to keep moving on. But I would have let Dominic milk the booze for a little longer. I could imagine him being a little irritated that Ripley, you know, jumped in like that. And I'm curious if she was instructed to do so, because that was pretty cool television. Frank, I think Ray's doing maybe the best mic work of his career. You know, it's never been a specialty of his, but he's had some good, earnest, believable promos where, you know, people just feel like, yeah, I'm on his side. I'm with him on his journey. I want to see him succeed. He's been good at that, but I think the emotional range and resonance of in this story with his body language and his tone and looking into his eyes through the mask, I buy the story. And I know some people think, oh, I don't believe a father and son would have this kind of breakup. And it's like, I know kids and parents who have complete divorces of their relationship for long spans of time, often when a kid is a teenager in his or her 20s. That happens. I think people relate to this. I think people know of instances of this happening. I mean, obviously this is dramatized and amplified in a pro wrestling sense, but I'm buying it. And Dominic is a punk. And I think people, if Dominic didn't have the implied relationship with Ripley, I don't think it would work as well, although it might be working okay. But the fact that wrestling fans are looking at him, and as Corey Graves said, judging whether he's right or wrong by saying Dominic's punching above his weight class by, quote, dating Ripley. But if that's the fan perception, then yeah, they're going to be even more mad. That's a heat generator. It's a heat generator in a locker room. You know, it was a heat generator for Miz when he, quote, got Maryse. You know, oh, you're not supposed to get somebody who's that beautiful. Miz, look at you. So I think wrestling fans are all in on it, Frank. I like the storyline. And I look forward to the segments with them and more of it. Your thoughts?
Well, I especially like the part where he said, I got a new mommy now. That mommy knows best.
Yes.
You know, it's funny, not to go off Ray and Dominic for a second, but I've been very skeptical about Judgment Day for a while, but my head is starting to turn the other way, and it's starting to maybe work for me. And I think the key is actually Rhea Ripley, believe it or not. Like, I think her actually being the leader and her kind of steering the ship is probably the way they need to go for this to work, you know, because she's kind of got that dark, you know, at least in character, she's kind of got that dark personality. And she kind of, I don't know why I thought of this tonight, but I thought of Sensational Sherry for a minute. Like, she could almost be that kind of a leader. I mean, obviously they're vastly different personalities, but just the way, like, Sherry led when she managed Harlem Heat, or, you know, whatever it was, when she managed Shawn Michaels at one point, you know. As far as the Ray part of it, yeah, I agree. Like, I haven't been as emotionally invested or personally invested in anything that Ray did until his son started getting involved. And you're seeing a much different side of Ray. Not that I didn't enjoy Ray's work before. I've always loved Ray's work. That's not the issue. But from an emotional perspective, from a personal perspective, you're seeing that side of him. And yeah, I mean, Dominic, he's got the body language, you know, he's making the expressions. The boos didn't seem piped in, did they? Because that was the first thing I thought of. You didn't think that the boos were kind of piped in a little bit, did you?
I didn't think so, because I don't know that they'd want that much heat on this angle. Like, okay, you know, like, I mean, not, they want heat on the angle, but I don't know that they'd go out of their way to pipe in boos. But we've got our on-site correspondent on hold, so we'll maybe get an idea from him. Because
okay,
that's a good thing to ask about. I mean, we should be perpetually suspicious. I feel like there's been less of that under Paul Levesque's run on top here.
Okay. I mean, the only thing that suggests that they weren't piped in is, you know, they were constantly trying to stop the crowd, and the crowd just kept booing louder and louder. So
yes,
maybe
yes,
that's, you know what I mean? But, you know, I have to ask, and it's just, you know.
Of course, yeah.
So, but, no, he's got the body language. He's got the, you know, expression. So, you know, I'm in a wait and see how this plays out. You know, I'm curious coming out of this, because at some point this is going to end, you know, at some point. I mean, ultimately the end of this is Ray versus Dominic. When and where that takes place, who knows? So that's the ultimate end of this. The question I'm going to have is, moving forward, what kind of character is Dominic going to be? How is he going to interact with other wrestlers? I mean, it's easy right now for him to do this opposite his father. You could tell that story, father, son, you know, son is tired of being in the father's shadow, this and that. Great. When it's all said and done, where do we go with Dominic? So that's my curiosity long-term.
Another nice touch tonight was Dominic telling Ray, here, hit me with a chair in the head, knowing his dad won't do it, but getting on his knees so his dad could reach his head.
That's a crucial part of the story. That's an essential part of the story, because, you know, part of this is obviously Ray. Ray still wants his son. Ray still believes that Dominic, you know, he could turn Dominic out of this, you know. So that's going to be an essential part of the story moving forward as Ray continues to try to pull him away from Judgment Day. But obviously that's not, you know, it's going to be Ray versus Dominic at some point.
Yes. All right. So let's go back to David. Thanks for holding while we responded to your topics. Anything you want to follow up on or add?
Yeah, I really agree with you guys about Dominic. And this is such a far cry from the paternity angle with Ray and Eddie back in the day that was totally just hokey and unrealistic and unbelievable. I'm actually emotionally invested in this. This does seem real, and this does seem believable, and this does seem relatable. And yeah, Dominic, you could tell looking at Dominic, he was eating it up out there when he was getting, and I don't think it was piped in either, because if you look at the background, the fans were on their feet and very animated, and they seemed really, really into it. You know, it's not one of those things where you hear the Goldberg chant, and you see no mouths moving out there in the crowd. You can see they were up and they were into it. So yeah, I'm going back to what Frank said, I'm really getting more into to Judgment Day here. In the beginning, I was like, but yeah, with the addition of Rhea and now with Dominic out there, I mean, they had a great entrance, and the crowd is into their entrance too. And I think they're coming around. I think they're bringing the fans around. And I think, they're doing a great job here with Judgment Day.
Cool. Is there anything else you want to bring up, David?
Oh, one minor little thing. I noticed that not all of the Vince McMahonisms have completely disappeared. When Io Sky did her moonsault onto Asuka, I heard one of the announcers, and she did it while she's wearing the championship, not the championship belt, but the championship.
Oh, no.
I did catch that, because that was the first thing I thought. She was wearing the belt. She came right across her and was like, yeah, she did it with the she was wearing the championship. We're getting there. Baby steps.
Old habits. I mean, and the thing is, it is a championship. I don't have a problem with hearing that now and then. It's not like sports entertainer. Like, that's not a thing. That's something Vince McMahon created. But in fairness, I mean, if they want to say title belt, or they want to say title, or they want to say championship belt, or they want to say championship, just don't make it a clunky thing that wrestlers say always when talking about what the belt that they're holding. Like, you know, just casual conversation, just common reference is often using jargon or shorthand for things. And saying, you know, I'm going to defend this belt against you should not be looked at as weird or too informal. It's not. It actually sounds like how I would imagine wrestlers would talk who aren't abiding by corporate rules. And I think one of the things that can undercut pro wrestling's the enjoyment of watching pro wrestling is when you feel the wrestlers are abiding by corporate rules. That's like the last reason people tune into pro wrestling, is to see a bunch of badass fighters abiding by corporate regulations and rules and best practices. So, but that said, I don't think the standard should be the same for announcers. I think if they, you know, say something that sounds a little more formal, that's fine, as long as we're not going into if you designed a sports entertainer from the ground up, it'd be Randy Orton. Like, trust me, Randy Orton never dreamed of being a sports entertainer, and he abhors that term. If he doesn't, he should, and certainly viewers do. Anyway, there's my little rant, David.
Agreed.
Yeah. Cool. Well, David, good to hear from you. Hope you call again.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Pleasure being on tonight.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Andrew.
I've got a Brad on deck, Justin after that, but I do want to get to our on-site correspondent. Nico is calling in. He attended Raw tonight. Nico, thank you. Sorry for the late notice getting back to you. Your email slipped by, but I'm glad we did reach you. How was the show tonight?
That was great, and I hope the connection's okay. I'm on the road, but I didn't get to take notes as I needed because I didn't see your email in time, but it was a good night, a solid, I'd say, 7 to 8, somewhere out of 10 in that range. It felt like it was great in-ring action, not a ton of storyline development, but the crowd, it was a really energetic crowd, and I think people enjoyed themselves throughout the night, so no major lull.
Nico, is there a safe way to take us off Bluetooth or not? We can live with how you sound, but I know it's always better if it's direct.
I can try a different way of doing it. Give me 1 second.
Sure. Sure thing. Yep, no rush.
Sorry about that.
Okay, any better?
Oh, yeah, that's way better. Thanks for doing that.
Yes,
yep,
sir.
Great.
Just put safety first. Safety first. So what I want to start with, I want to talk about some off-air happenings, anything that happened before and after Raw, but I'm curious about crowd reactions for three topics in particular. We'll start with Hometown Bayley. I want to know what it was like in the building for their promo. I felt like we just talked about it. We felt it was not an inspired effort by anyone in the ring in the promo. But by the time the match happened, it seemed like the crowd was really into it. They came back from a break and acknowledged there was a dueling chant because Bayley's from the Bay Area. Just kind of talk about the reaction to Bayley and how it felt maybe different than if this was taking place outside of that market.
Yeah, so I think people were excited to react to the hometown kid, but the promo was, as you said, it was so lackluster and, you know, just sort of bland that it really, I mean, the segment fell apart because of it. People started the what chance and otherwise sat on their hands. And it's remarkable, you know, the criticism of their act is consistent every week, and yet they seem to be charging ahead with the same, you know, approach of just sort of, you know, and some local cheap heat and you know, insulting the crowds. But and so I think that took folks out of it, and I think that combination with Alexa being the least over of the face faction. I think people went into the match after a long night, you know, just feeling worn down and not particularly excited about that main event. And I don't know if the match itself was also lackluster. I almost think the chants were just a way for people to entertain themselves. You know, I don't think that it reflected actual sort of particular interest in the match or Bailey's, star level. It was just sort of, I mean, that was my impression of it. People were leaving, you know, midway through the match, not a huge exodus, but, people were started to trickle out during the match. By the time, you know, the match ended, there was a steady stream of folks already headed out. They were, you know, they were not sort of sticking around to see whatever happened with these folks after.
That's interesting.
Nico, did they announce a dark match or a off-air main event, and was there one?
Right after the show ended, Bianca said basically, you know, we're not going to end it like this. You know, I've got three. We're going to take you on here. And we had run to the restroom, and the match was over by the time we left the restroom, you know, 4 minutes later. So it was a very quick match, and Bianca's music was playing, so I assume they won.
Wow. Yeah, that's not if they hadn't announced something else, it's not a lot of incentive to stick around. Was there anything before Raw went on the air, by the way, that did people get any kind of bonus content there?
They did the main event taping. It started with Dana Brooke and Tamina. Dana Brooke pinned her, you know, in 5-6 minutes. And then Gable and Otis defeated Shelton Benjamin and Mustafa Ali after probably a 15-minute match. It was, you know, pretty solid.
Yeah. So Shelton Benjamin now. Still hanging out on main event. another match I was curious about was Lashley and Seth. I'm curious just what kind of pop Lashley got for his elaborate ring entrance and if he seemed like a superstar babyface who's really over. And then also, what is the in-arena vibe for Seth? Is it, we don't like him, but we're going to sing a song because it's fun? Or is it, this we like this character, and therefore we're going to sing a song? Like, is there any way to kind of discern that based on how they react to him otherwise?
I do feel for any of the faces that are up against Seth right now, because people love to sing and it exudes, you know, and he is very charismatic, and in his heel persona, he encourages the singing, of course. And so, I Lashley had a tough time overcoming that. I think his entrance was, much more, I'm blanking on the word I'm looking for, but it was not as strong a reaction as one would expect from, you know, his recent months. And I think it has a lot to do with how, you know, enthusiastic people were for Seth in the beginning. The match though got people invested. The longer it went, the more they, seem engaged, and the further distance they got from singing Seth's song, the more they sort of took the right side for cheering Lashley and booing Seth. And I think, you know, I mean, that, you know, several of the sort of high spots of the match, I think, really big reaction. Probably in terms of the matches, I would say the most engaged the crowd was all night. I you know, maybe there were a couple others that were close, but, and, yeah, to your question about Seth, I think that they, you know, when he does heelish things, they are quick to flip on him. But when it's just him doing the dance, the dancing and the parading around, that itself doesn't generate heel heat. They are happy to, you know, sing and then cheer along with that act. So, yeah.
The third thing, and then I'll throw it to Frank, is the Miz TV segment and Dexter Lumis. Is Dexter over with the crowd? Did they pop and see Minda, you know, engage? Were they... Did they find Miz's ranting or griping about Dexter, you know, rightfully so, you know, invading his house and then being a weirdo and drawing a picture of his family and leaving with the crowd into it? Or is this like a time to go to the bathroom or concessionary?
You know, it was very quiet. I think because people don't know. I mean, a few people around me were saying, you know, acting as if they hadn't seen or were very unfamiliar with Lumis. So that's part of the issue. Second, as you say, like, it's an odd position to be cheering for the stalker, and especially when Miz, you know, like the Minions line, I mean, cracked up the crowd. He's not being particularly unlikable right now. The audience, I would say, was sports entertained in that segment. They weren't expressing, you know, strong support or antagonism towards either of them, but I think they were engaged. They were enjoying watching the segment and wanted to see what unfolded. But I think it does. I mean, there was so much of that in the Vince era, and I think it's. I mean, my own opinion was the amount that was basically, I would say, the only segment where that was the case tonight, and it was fine for it to be in that dosage. And you know, I don't know where they're going with it, but it doesn't seem to me, you know, definite that Lumis is going to end up being the babyface here. It is. So, I mean, maybe it seems more likely than not, but it is still odd to be cheering for the bizarre stalking, you know, stalker character.
I'm cheering for Dexter mostly because it irritates Corey Graves. but not entirely, but that's part of it. Frank, what have you got for Nico?
Hey, Nico, how you doing?
Hey, Frank.
Good to talk to you, man. Two things. Wade and I were talking. I was a little suspicious of the boos that we heard on television. It sounded piped in. Now, maybe I have post-traumatic...
For Dominic in particular or in general?
For right. Dominic, yeah. When he got the when he got the microphone. Now maybe I have post-traumatic stress syndrome from the Thunderdome when they were able to make their own reactions, and I just don't have, you know, WWE doesn't have my trust in that sense. But it did sound a little piped in on TV. Now you obviously haven't heard the TV; you were in the arena when Dominic got the mic and was about to speak. You know, did the boos keep getting louder and louder when he was trying to talk, or was it just, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it was. I didn't see the show, but it was overwhelming. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all if it was au naturel. The people were unglued, and you know, the Rhea and. All of them were occasionally looking back away from the hard cam and sort of smirking. You could tell that they were surprised by the level of heat. They were enjoying it. Mm-hmm. You know, a little bit. It was almost like, you know, act like you've been there, you know, and you don't have to seem so happy that the audience is booing you. You are being booed. But it was fun to see how, I mean, yeah, people were going nuts, and I don't know what it was. I mean, you know, obviously, I think the angle last week worked really well. Dominic and his like big chin and that big smirk is, you know, really fun to boo at. And I think I'm trying to correct me if I'm wrong, but there hadn't really been, other than the Bailey segment, which you know, didn't go over well, there wasn't really any in-ring, you know, mic segment up to that point. And so I think people were, you know, also just excited to, like, have something like that happening that they could sink their teeth into.
Interesting, too. And I thought of this as you were talking, Nico. Like, California, I think there's probably a strong support for Rey Mysterio. I mean, I know, you know, he's from San Diego. Obviously, that's a lot further south than you in San Jose. But, you know, it might still be that, you know, he's really beloved out there in that state. And, you know, now that his son has turned on him, you know, they're really upset with him, which is, listen, this is what you want in wrestling. You want to be personally invested in what's going on screen, you know, and if everybody's personally mad at Dominic, then it works. You know, that's the whole point. That's what, you know, we've always wanted when watching wrestling. So, okay, I'm glad that sounded natural. The other guy that I was curious about was Butch. Because it seemed like the crowd was into him. And I just wonder if maybe there's a sense amongst fans that, you know, they want their Pete Dunne back. You know what I mean? Like, they're done with this whole Butch bit and they want their old friend Pete. Did he feel like he was over with the crowd or, you know, just kind of part of the furniture, I guess?
I think people were a little bit conflicted with that match, because the Street Profits are such fan favorites, and they were over with the crowd, and yet, you know, the Brawling Brutes are having their moment right now, but they haven't been around and I think formed that relationship with at least certainly the main roster audience as much as the Street Profits had, so it felt almost like people were sort of expecting them to be playing the heel roles, even though I don't know that that's what WWE was aiming at for tonight. And so, yeah. I mean, I got the sense, yeah, that people are into Pete Sack. They like the joint manipulation. He's got a unique look. But they didn't go full bore cheering because of who he was up against.
Okay, makes sense. Yeah, it's a strange they're in a weird spot too, because I felt like the Brawling Brutes were turning babyface, you know, along with Sheamus, but then they're more in the heel role tonight, so they're kind of in that weird, they're kind of in a weird spot right now with those two. I don't really know which way they're going, you know, but yeah, I guess we'll have to see.
What are you going to remember most from the show, Nico, and what was the low point or the aspect of the show that you think didn't work, that flopped, if anything flopped?
Yeah, I think Bayley and that act, it's so sad. I think of her in some ways like Chris Jericho, in the sense that she's not often a centerpiece, but she's, you know, can perform in the ring and can be funny, and it's pointing that she's just not. I think you've put it really well in your shows, that it sounds like she comes up with her material, you know, on the car ride over from the hotel to the arena. And you've been away for so long. This would be the time to sort of, you know, really invest. And that's been disappointing. And I think both the Lashley Rollins match and the, Bro and RKO RKO, the Riddle and Ray tag team match were the highlights. I don't know what, you know, I saw on Twitter that someone in the crowd had a sign with one of the I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the term of that.
The QR code.
Yes, the QR code that led to the WWE website. Is that accurate?
I did not take the bait, so I don't know. Frank, did you see what that was about?
You know, now that he mentions it, I think for a brief second I saw somebody with a QR code. I mean,
Saxton said, "Hey, I like what I see," or something, which was very weird. But I didn't. I was too busy typing on my report to see what people were saying on Twitter about it. So I don't know where it led, and if it was a renegade fan trying to advertise something or take people to a non-WWE site, or if it was kind of an official thing that's leading somewhere.
Mm.
So, what struck Nico, me you may is know more than us if you've been on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, so it looked as if at least one of – it seemed that there were two people who did this, and the first one seemed to, as far as I could tell from Twitter, lead to some WWE.com website that had, you know, clues around the White Rabbit music that's been playing at shows. Then a second person went across. I didn't see if that, you know, similarly went, but what struck me was that I saw the second guy get sort of accosted by one of the production staff, not like an arena staffer, but someone who was with WWE with the lanyard and a full suit on. And so it struck me as like, you know, are they going to that level of stagecraft to have someone come out and yell at the person whose sign links to the company website or maybe a separate thing. But anyhow, the second guy, whoever that was, got yelled at. So,
Well, we've got we had the stuff going on in the background, you know, early on with Paul Levesque. Can we say early on, or are we still early on? Well, anyway, the earliest on with Paul Levesque's run, there's stuff going on in the background, the parking garage and stuff. So there's, you know, it is. He seems to be into this Easter egg thing. So I'm sure I'll know more, you know, soon. But I haven't had a chance to. I probably should have done the QR code just so I could report on it here tonight and make sure I knew what was going on. But that's interesting. So what the lanyard was. Putting on a show that he was getting rid of the guy.
And the only other, from a production standpoint, the only other thing that has changed since they basically come around the Bay Area once a year in September, and they are now, they are doing the fan cam type segments during the periods when wrestlers have been introduced and are waiting in the ring during the commercial, and it's a much better transition because you're not sitting there watching them in the ring. They're doing the fan cam type stuff, and it was an element that has made, you know, that 3 hours with commercial breaks sitting in an arena go by much, much faster. So, I think they've made some slight but continuous improvements to that experience, and it showed tonight.
So are you saying that happens when wrestlers come to the ring before commercial break, or they're doing that during commercial breaks, but then the wrestler ring entrance happens after the break? Because it seemed like there weren't as many ring entrances before commercial. Of course, there are only five matches on this show.
Yeah, I mean, my recollection of the last time was that when a wrestler had come to the ring and then they went to break, they would just, I mean, they might show a commercial, but it'd basically just be the wrestler sitting there, you know, sometimes chatting with the people in the front row. And you were very conscious of the fact that everything, you know, this simulated sports event had just, and everything was just paused. Whereas the way they've done it now, the wrestler sort of leaves the ring, the ring announcer comes in, is narrating, you know, what signs are in the audience or whatever, and it's just, you know, that awkward pause of, you know, whoever sitting in the ring doing nothing was eliminated.
It was a better in-arena fan experience. Game ops, as they call it, is better.
Yeah.
How did Austin Theory come across to you in terms of a guy who might be facing John Cena at WrestleMania next year? Somebody that they've got circled as a potential centerpiece act for years to come. You saw him tonight in a, you know, relatively early stage of what he hopes will be a long and very successful main event career. Did it seem like he just blended in, or did something stand out about him tonight?
I think he had a lot of charisma tonight. Regularly, I mean, making contact with the audience, engaging them and eliciting loud responses, really crisp in the ring. I was very impressed. I think he's improved quite a bit, and especially, you know, I sometimes he trips up on the mic, but in the ring tonight, where it was, you know, really focused on that aspect of his work, I thought he came off looking great, and definitely the confidence is there. He seems like, you know, things are going well. He knows they're going well, and he's pushing it. And I was impressed.
That's a good way to put it. You know, he senses things are going well, and he's just got to behave. He's just got to be, you know, well, I shouldn't even say just behave. Like, you don't want to ruin it. You know, I'm thinking of Velveteen Dream and, you know, just what that turned into. And there's other, you know, wrestlers who were on a good course. And, you know, Drew McIntyre, you know, he's talked about that. So I think in Austin Theory's mind, it's like, all right, don't screw up. Keep working hard. But, I mean, I'm told he is, like, driven to be excellent. You know, like, he really wants to be good.
I could say, I agree. You could tell. You could just tell the body language, you know. He wants to get better. He wants to learn. He wants to improve. The announcers even made a point of Owen seeing something in Austin Theory. I thought that was an interesting comment.
Yeah, in commentary, that was interesting.
It was interesting. And, yeah, I mean, I'm, you know, I don't know how over Theory is right now with the crowd. I'm a little skeptical of that. But, you know, we got to remember, like, he was given Money in the Bank under Vince. Like, I don't know that would have happened under Triple H, but I think that he is in a good place. Like, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Shawn Michaels in 1992 when he first turned. You know, he's kind of in that place right now, and he can be, you know, in that mid-card kind of IC title, you know, U.S. title picture, but eventually grow into a main event player.
I
mixed him up with Kevin Owens is a good sign.
I think you're right that he's when he was first announced, there wasn't a strong reaction to him, and he is facing a headwind because he's been portrayed as this like ineffectual, you know, goofball in so much of his recent, you know, sort of character developments. And so I think it's all the more impressive that once he gets going, you know, he can really turn the crowd against him and command the room in that way, you know, even though, so often he's sort of portrayed as a joke. So another, I think, good mark for him.
Is there anything else that you'd like to pass along, Nico, from your experience tonight?
No. I think that covers it. And thanks.
How was the attendance there compared to usual? How was the attendance compared to usual?
So I live in San Francisco. I this is my first show at SAP. It was basically a sellout in the lower bowl. The entire entire upper deck was curtained off. I was checking. I didn't get my tickets until pretty late, and they hadn't opened up the upper deck. So it was basically a sellout of what they had opened up.
Mm. Yep. Cool.
Hey, Nico, before you go, how long of a hop is it from San Francisco to the SAP Center? I ask this because occasionally I lay over out in San Francisco with my job.
Okay.
And if ever there's an event, you know, at SAP, you know, if it's not too much of a drive, I wouldn't mind going. Is it a big hop between the two cities?
Nico, before you say, I want to say my over-under guess is 72 minutes.
It was 49 minutes from the heart of the city, but from the airport, it's probably only, you know, 30 minutes. So not bad from the airport.
All right, so if I San Jose, I'd have to lay over in San Jose then for it to make sense, because that's quite the Uber ride.
Nico, awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time, and great job. Let us know next time you go to show.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Take care.
You bet.
Have a good night.
Bye.
If you would like to be an on-site correspondent like Nico just was, drop me a line at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Put the name of the city and the date of the show in the subject line. It just makes it a little easier for me to keep track of things with all the shows we do. And I'll be in touch. And if you I say this now and then, if you're not like super eager to be on, but you'll help if we need it, you can even put that in email. Say, you know, let me be the backup, but if someone else offers, you know, that's fine. But if you're going to do it, that's even better. So let us know. It's always great. Sometimes we don't have them, and I wish we did. And this was one of those nights where I was like, I hope we're able to connect with Nico.
If I didn't have such a bad experience at Grand Slam last year, I would have been your on-site correspondent this Wednesday. But we had such a miserable time. I mean, listen, God bless them. It's going to be a great show. you know. But yeah, that arena's got had major problems last year, and we were just so burnt. I tried to talk the wife into going. She's like, nope.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't blame her.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll shift back to phone calls. If you are live streaming the show and haven't decided to call us yet, consider yourself invited. Let us know your thoughts on the show. 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. We'll be live streaming after Dynamite on Wednesday for the big Grand Slam event, and then Friday after SmackDown. Before I get to Brad, I do want to note as a follow-up on what we're just talking about. Dan C. was listening live and said, PW Insider's reporting the QR code is indicating a debut on the September 23rd SmackDown. And Dan says, it smells like Bray Wyatt. The link, this links nicely with the Alexa comments earlier in the show. As people know, I'm not big on, you know, like show-off reporting where it's like, hey, I'm going to spoil something for you because I heard it. And, you know, I think in this day and age, it's a TV show. And, you know, I just think saying what happens on a show before it airs is kind of like, especially if it's a big surprise, isn't great. That said, WWE, like if I had heard, oh, Bray's going to be on SmackDown Friday, I'm not sure that I would, I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't think I'd report it. Like, I think it depends on the, you know, there's a lot of factors that can play into it. But if WWE is going to start hinting at it or, you know, making people speculate, it's absolutely logical to speculate on Bray Wyatt. I had heard weeks back from a WWE source, you know, Bray is coming back. And so this, you know, this would link up. That's not to say things haven't fallen through since then. I haven't done follow-up on it. I like to be surprised more than I like to get a scoop that just takes away some of the fun for viewers to be surprised. But that said, if WWE's going to walk by with the QR code and talk about a debut and you have Alexa Bliss, you know, saying comments that might point that direction, Frank, I have a feeling we're going to – the next 4 or 5 days are going to be filled with pretty wide speculation on this.
What was the comment of which you speak? Because I might have missed it or just forgot.
It was – you know what? There was something – and I was almost going to rewind and listen, but it had – I think it might have even been by, like, Bailey and then Alexa's response. Just something about, you know, I don't know who you are anymore. This isn't the real you. And then Bliss made some sort of cryptic, vague comment – about that, and I want to go back and rewatch it. But it jumped out to me as what my reaction was that something? But then I didn't think about it again.
Well, you know, it's funny because during the match, I don't know if you picked up on it, but very briefly the lights went out. So I saw that and I'm like, oh God, like, is this a Bray? Is this a Bray debut? And it's funny, not to digress too much, but at the Dynamite tapings last year at UBS on December 8th, there was a point where, like, the lights went out in, like, a wave. Like, just from left to right, like, a bunch of lights just started flashing. I'm like, oh, God, like, is Bray going to become the AEW at this point? So when I saw that tonight in the match between Bayley and Alexa, you know, that's the first thing I pointed to, and I even tweeted that out. So I know there was something in that promo, and like you, I'll go back and rewind to see if I can figure it out.
I looked at Jason, I think it was Jason's report on ProSync.net.
Yeah, I haven't.
Yeah, he was reporting on it tonight. And he said that Bailey said she's a shell of her former self. So that was part – that is what I was remembering.
Okay. Yeah. In other words, once Bray got into her head, you know, a couple of years ago, it changed her. And yeah. And then the whole thing with therapy, would you have a lobotomy or something? Yeah, it was.
Yeah. But you could see that as just nothing too. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't strike me as obvious. It's just like, oh, they're for sure, you know, planting seeds for something.
I hope they don't link those two. I hope they don't link those two again. It's, oh God. Bray and Alexa, don't do it again.
I'm open-minded to what they do. We'll see. But yeah. I mean, Bray is creative, you know, and when Martel is creative, I'm curious, you know, The Fiend was, you know, amazing in certain ways and then sort of a letdown in other ways, but it's hard to judge with the pandemic stuff. In a way, it almost enhanced, you know, being able to pre-produce stuff. But anyway,
yeah.
Well, I don't want to get too far ahead of things here. In case, you know, that's not it's not a thing. So
it's not a thing, sure.
Yep. All right, so Brad and Justin, as I said, you are the two up next. We'll start with Brad in New York. Thanks for holding so much, Brad. Go ahead and let us know what you thought of Raw tonight.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Frank. Thanks for having me on. Great recap by Nico there. And, Frank, you know, I figured you were probably from New York because after I hear you were considering going to Arthur Ashe, because I've never met a person named Frank not from New York originally or currently. So I don't know if that's just a thing. Have you, Frank? Have you ever met another Frank who's not from New York?
I do have to say, in my day job, there are Franks that reside outside of New York, and I was very surprised when I made that discovery. So, you know.
Yeah, I'm surprised too. All right, so the crowd did seem great tonight. I mean, they really brought a lot of energy, I think, to a show that seemed at times a little lackluster, like. The Alexa Bliss main event, I could understand why they weren't that into that match with Bayley. But that's a perfect example of a match that should have been 8 minutes or not, 21 minutes with the commercials,
yeah.
or whatever it
yeah.
ended up being. And that's, I've said it a few times on the show, but that's a problem that I have with the way Triple H is giving everyone so much time. I don't think every match deserves so much time, but regardless of that, I was just curious, with, Matt Riddle, I know he's fighting this this fight pit match, which I don't know if you guys touched upon it before I had gotten on, but that's a very interesting type of match, a very dangerous type of match, truthfully, that it's going to be a kind of a shocking thing to see at Extreme Rules because of the way, they suplex you off the top and down into the ring and it's like an 8-foot drop. It's pretty crazy. And, it's interesting with the Matt Riddle name, how they're just emphasizing Matt Riddle with, the graphic on the Tron as Matt Riddle and everything is Matt Riddle. It's like when Albert, Pujols comes up to bat, they might say Albert Pujols coming to the plate. Pujols is 2-for-2 tonight. You don't always use the first and last name at all times, but they seem hell bent on just saying Matt Riddle, Matt Riddle, Matt Riddle every single time. And almost to the point that it's just forced and weird. Regardless, with Theory, and I'm happy you guys asked about kind of the reaction that Theory was getting, because I think he's so great to be honest with you guys, he's really probably my favorite or second favorite person in all WWE right now. I love the way he talks. I love his extreme arrogance. I love the way he, in the ring is always talking, S-H-I-T, you know what I'm saying? He is just so captivating to me, and maybe I'm the only one because I don't really see anyone else really cheering him on too much, but I do think it's funny how that briefcase is all smashed up. It's something I always notice when he comes on TV with it, how, like if Roman, hits someone in the head with the belt and one of the rhinestones or the diamonds falls out, they replace it immediately. So that belt looks perfect, but that money in the briefcase is getting destroyed, and it's kind of like representative of what's happening with Theory right now, because he's getting buried. I don't think he's won a match at all, and in a really long time. I really actually don't even remember. Maybe he won one random Raw match, but since he won that briefcase, I don't think he's won one time. And I mean, do you think that's indicative of the plans for him going forward to make him into like this, kind of, I don't want to say a joke, because I don't think Triple H views him that way. I think they are high on him, but like that he will never be a successful cash-in and this is just a farce. And I mean, what do you guys think of that?
So they're very high on Theory. I believe Paul Levesque is very high on Theory's upside. And I think the people he's losing to is not indicative of a burial. It's indicative of they're willing to have Theory not seem dominant at this point, because that's not where his character is. He's got Money in the Bank. He's a heel you want to see get beat up, but he's also somebody who you can gain some credibility beating. I wasn't sure with KO and Theory which way they were going to go, because I've been burned so much with Kevin Owens over the past, 7+ years on the main roster. I'm rooting for both guys to succeed, and I am, as Frank brought up, intrigued by this idea that Kevin Owens sees greatness in Theory. So maybe The idea is that they're telling a story, and that theory is not succeeding because X, Y, and Z. He's obsessed with Money in the Bank. He wants to take shortcuts. He doesn't need to take shortcuts. And maybe Kevin Owens and Theory fight it out, and they end up aligned in some way. I don't know how that meshes with, you know, eventually I hope Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn aligning. But it's an interesting seed to plant. I'm not reading into him losing as them not high in him. I'm reading into it as they're up to something with him, and it's part of a larger, probably like 3-year master plan for him. Frank, how about you?
Yeah, well, under Triple H's leadership, I do feel a little more comfortable that there is some sort of a plan. I mean, under Vince, you would see all too often Money in the Bank holders lose matches, and it wasn't part of anything. Like, it wasn't part of any story. Like, the first person that comes to mind was Daniel Bryan back in 2011. Like, I feel like when he won Money in the Bank, he pretty much lost every match up until the point that he cashed in. So, yeah, at this point now, there's a little bit more of a story being told, I think. And, you know, I did think about, Brad, what you brought up about him being the first person to not successfully cash in. You know, like, I don't know if they would actually go through with that, but the first person that could go through it is Theory, because I don't think there's a person on the planet that thinks he's going to cash in on Roman Reigns and win. Now, do you do Cody beating Roman at WrestleMania and then Theory cashing in right away? I hope they don't do that. I really don't. But, I mean, the possibility exists, right? I mean, you have to at least think about that, you know. Or, you know, Cody wins and like a month or two later before the next Money in the Bank, you know, he cashes in like just at the last minute, just before the expiration of the right to cash in. I mean, there's all kinds of possibilities. So, yeah, I agree with Wade. I don't think he's being buried. I think that there's probably like a plan B, you know, because whatever Vince had in mind when Theory won Money in the Bank, you know, there's something different going on now because Triple H wasn't in charge at that point. So, yeah, I'm curious to see how it plays out.
Brett,
yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you for that. You know, a couple really quick other things, and then I'll let you go to Justin. But Alexa Bliss, you know, I find her to be, someone who's really likable, who's just not playing that role tonight or not playing that role now. And, like, there's a video on YouTube. It's like, you know, 7 minutes of Alexa Bliss being mean to people, or 7 minutes of Alexa Bliss bullying people, or whatever the case is. And she is, honestly, she's so damn good on the mic. When she has to be, especially when she's kind of like playing that mean girl role, she's so good at it. And now I feel like you had mentioned earlier, Frank, I think, you know, something about her promos don't seem, you know, whatever. You know, I would argue there really aren't any promos. Like, there's just, yeah, maybe there's a word here in the ring, like, oh, yeah, you think you could take me down, watch, see, and try, or go ahead and try. But, like, there's no actual speaking from her, and I think that's why the crowd isn't invested in her. And I feel like it's weird when you have someone who's that good on the mic. Like, I would rate her in the top 10% of people in the WWE in terms of the skill on the mic. And just having zero to do with that aspect of her whole act, it's kind of weird to me that they're not utilizing that at all. And one other thing that very unimportant, really, but I think with all these acquisitions that Triple H is making and bringing back all these people, I'm really surprised he hasn't brought back a Jim Johnston. Jim Johnston has said that, you know, AEW didn't contact him about making their theme music. He was shocked by that. He was in an interview very recently with this Van Vliet guy, or I forget exactly who it was, but I think the theme music, like Damage Control's theme music, if you notice, all the good theme music is either done by, you know, the band that Edge uses, Alter Bridge, you know, or it's done, you know, the old CFO songs, whether it's You know, all those theme songs are great. The Kevin Owens theme song, the ones that people kind of look for, the new theme songs are terrible by this Def Rebel group. And Wade, I would love to have you at some point look into the status of that contract with Def Rebel and if there's any chance of, you know, maybe that being a change, because they need a change in whoever is creating the theme music. That Damage Control theme song is garbage. Like, all of the new theme songs for all these wrestlers are terrible unless they're done by an outside band. And yeah, and I it's such an important part of the presentation, and I'd love for you to look into that if you can at some point, because I view that as a very important part of the whole package and, you know, and everything, and I'd love to see them bring back Jim Johnston, as which would be a gigantic acquisition, far more than bringing in Dakota Kai or something like that, in my opinion. But thank you, guys, and great show as always, and I'll let you get on, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on the Alexa Bliss thing and even the music.
Yeah, thanks, Brad. Before I throw to Frank on this, Frank, you know, one thing I'm kind of hoping Paul Levesque does, because I think it's a little personal between him and Tony Khan. I mean, given Tony Khan's reaction at the Q&A, and I understand it was a stressful situation with the CM Punk stuff, and it might have triggered him a little bit, but it seems personal between them. And I'd be interested if Paul Levesque can use some of that record-setting revenue that's 10 times what AEW is likely to draw in revenue this year. Maybe buy a few original songs to play, you know, something Tony Khan's been paying for. So it can be done. And boy, is that a shortcut to, you know, and maybe WWE just, you know, they want to create their own stuff. They want, you know, for whatever reason, they just, you know, and then there's other options. But sprinkling in, you know, like for Bray Wyatt, for instance, what if they got a commercially successful, well-known song for him? And that's going to be the first guy to get it. If indeed he makes his return. So anyway, I want to throw that in the conversation, but you certainly were verbally nodding along to what he was saying about the entrance, the theme music. And I agree, it's such a big part of wrestling, and it's such an intangible what clicks and what doesn't, but what they're doing, the new stuff, is not clicking.
It makes a lot of the WCW themes from the late 90s sound great, and that's not a compliment, okay? I mean, there was some bad stuff, and I'd actually rather hear that than hear anything that Def Rebel puts out. They're generic, they're boring, they're not engaging. I mean, you know, between Sami Zayn's theme, you know, not the current one, but the old one, and Kevin Owens, and, you know, all the themes of more recent years were very engaging and identifiable, you know, and like, you know, a song, you know, a wrestler's theme is good if you could play it in your head. I can hardly play any of these theme songs in my head, nor do I even want to try. They're just not, they're not inspired. Half of them all sound the same. Like, I think Shayna Baszler's and Sami Zayn's almost sound similar. I mean, how inspiring is that? You know, I mean, you don't have to go to original songs. I mean, if there's a song that someone, you know, truly loves and identifies with, I don't have a problem with that. I don't think you want to do that for everybody. You know, like, I was surprised Tony didn't pay Europe for the final countdown for, you know, for Danielson. But, you know, I don't know what the deal was over there. You'd know better than me.
I read something about it, but I think Brian just wanted to move on to something else. But I could be remembering that wrong.
He wanted to move on. Like I said, yeah, and I saw something with Bray. I guess there's a Jefferson Airplane song that he's connected to, or maybe I'm just, you know, I'm just seeing this on social media in regard to Bray, and, you know, whatever. You're not going to report anything unless you hear it and it's credible. So I don't want to get you into that. So that's pretty much the music.
Cool.
As far as Alexa, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, go ahead.
With Alexa, I mean, I think we touched on it earlier. I think that, and I'm hopeful it's what you suggested, that, you know, it's a little bit of a holding pattern with her right now, and they're just waiting for the right moment to bring her back into, you know, her personality of the past, which I thought was over and I thought worked back in the day. So, you know, we'll see.
She's really talented. She's better than what she's even doing with the material she's being given. And that's where there's just part of me that wonders if she's not sandbagging herself so that whatever is next feels more dramatic. That's my hope. And I don't want to say, like, when I say sandbagging, I don't mean like underperforming even though it's a definition, underperforming on purpose to sabotage the show, but that, like, it's in her instructions are, no, be kind of just bland and fly under the radar right now because we don't want anyone to miss this character when we move to this next phase for you.
I agree.
All right, Justin and Charlotte, thank you so much for holding patiently. What'd you think of Raw tonight?
How you doing, fellas? Good talk all night. Touching, I'm kind of surprised about it because it was very glaring watching the show and then saw it a lot on social media. These running finishes for these matches, it's out of control. It's just at this point, I feel like it's out of control. We talked about it a few weeks ago with the That might have been last week with Solo Sikoa and Drew McIntyre, and I wasn't as upset as you, Wade, because I kind of understand you got some new debuting, you want to keep Drew strong. But tonight, it's just, I mean, it was all over the show. I think that tag match with Street Profits was probably the only match on the show that didn't have a run-in finish. I mean, it was just all over the show. And remember, Todd, you and Todd talked about this before with the bravery that people don't feel Tony Khan has of beating people. It's really starting to show on the WWE side where they don't want to beat anybody. I mean, even if it means building someone up to a certain level to move further up the ladder, it's just everything's a distraction finish or interference finish, and I get we're not getting the DQs we was getting, but, I mean, I don't know what's more infuriating, a DQ or five or six matches with run-ins. I mean, I don't really know which one's worse. Are they equally as bad? I mean, what do you guys think about that?
Yeah. Well, we mentioned it at the top of the show that we'd get to it, and I'm glad you circled back to it, Justin. I definitely wanted to get to it before the end of the show, and we could have headlined with it, Frank. I mean, you know, this wasn't a show with one dominant thing to talk about as the top talking point. And the finishes, you know, I mean, yeah, a week and a half ago, I went off on the Solo Sikoa Drew match because it was the third finish on three straight WWE shows, counting the PLE, where – you know, you got invested in a match, and you know you can justify them all individually. I mean, I get the rationale, but right. you got to step back and go. But wait, are we doing this too much? And you know, I've been saying I just want Paul Levesque to be a brave booker. I want brave booking to take place, and that sometimes means having a really good wrestler lose to another really good wrestler clean, and that's, you know, that happens in team sports. It happens in MMA. It happens in boxing. It's okay. Like, it really is. If you bake that into what people expect as viewers week to week, month to month, year to year, no one's going to write anybody off because somebody wins a match. But when you do these finishes, and it's so weird because, and I was talking with Todd about this last week, so many wrestling fans, their instinct is to be like, well, come on, you know, they had to do this and they had to do that and they had to protect this guy and it had this purpose and it was storyline driven. And it's like, well, right, but you've been indoctrinated into thinking that that's the way things are done and that they have to be done that way. But there is this side effect that I think people have just become numb to or don't realize, which is people are less invested in moves and near falls and matches when they're announced ahead of time because nobody thinks there's stakes. If baseball games got rained out constantly and – it didn't matter what the score was. It's like they just didn't talk about the game. Just never happened. No, there was no decision, no redo. Just, oh, it rained. So game's over. Thanks. It was 4-1, but it doesn't count, and we're not even going to redo it. If that happened all the time, people would stop investing in baseball games when there was any sign of rain. People would be like, well, nothing that happens matters. And so I know there's probably better analogies out there, but I'm trying to think of like something that would be ridiculous, and people would disengage. And what I'm fearful of for Paul Levesque is, you know, for all the absence of irritants, you know, the editing out of things that just drove people mad and certain improvements with talent being brought in and other aspects. These finishes with interference, distraction, shenanigans at ringside constantly, it's such too high a percentage, Frank. And at some point just have somebody beat somebody. And the first time it's gonna be like, oh my God, they're burying the guy who lost. And the second time, they're going to be like, oh, my God, they're burying her because she lost. And the third time, they're going to be like, oh, I think they're burying her. By the fourth or fifth time, they're going to go, oh, wait. Matches have outcomes.
Yeah.
And they matter. And there's the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. And there's a journey that wrestlers are on. And not everybody who's getting pushed is going to have zero clean losses on their record over the course of 4 months. There's going to be some clean losses. And that's okay. And people will get used to it. Frank, over to you.
My favorite baseball team has lost 55 times this year. Do I think any less of my favorite baseball team because they lost 55? No, because they've also won 94 and they're in the playoffs after tonight, okay? So, you know, the New York Football Giants lost 13 times last year. I still love the Giants, you know, and I still watch them. I'm not going to not watch them, okay? Certainly have more of a reason to watch this year with them being 2-0, but I digress. God, I don't even know where I start with this because there's so much to talk about and so much to unpack.
Well, Frank, let me pause for 1 second since we went down this road. Justin, you're probably the last caller tonight, and I have not seen the score of the game tonight. So say nothing. Say nothing about the Viking game tonight because I really want to watch that either tonight or tomorrow.
Absolutely.
So no hints, no nothing. Just don't bring it up. Now that we're talking, I'm just worried that Justin's like, yeah, like tonight, and I'm going to be like, no.
Yeah.
So anyway, go ahead, Frank.
I'm sorry I even took us down that path. So
I started it, but yeah, you took us a little more directly.
Anyway, you know, the problem with doing, like you said, the problem with doing distraction finish after distraction finish after distraction finish is it becomes the norm. And when you do an actual clean finish, it actually feels abnormal. You look and you're like, oh, well, there was no distraction. There was no interference. WWE must have no plans for them because they lost clean. So they're, you know, something must be going on, like what happened with the Street Profits tonight. You know, and you think you're protecting the loser by having some kind of interference, but what you don't realize, a side effect of doing constant distractions, is you're not really doing anything for the winner. Like, the winners are winning because of a distraction. Bobby Lashley should have no problem beating Seth Rollins in a clean match. Vice versa. Seth Rollins, a very talented wrestler, should have no problem beating Bobby Lashley. Nobody is going to think any less of either wrestler, okay, if the person wins clean. All right. Now, Justin, I don't know if you watch New Japan, okay, but I'm sure you're familiar with Okada, right? I'm sure you're vaguely familiar with him,
right,
if you don't
right.
watch, okay? Okada lost to Jeff Cobb in the G1 tournament. Jonah in the G1 tournament. Do I think anything less of Okada? No, okay? He lost a match. But he rebounded and he won the tournament. And he's still the same person. And it doesn't make me view him any less. But WWE has conditioned you that, you know, in matches with people that they're, quote, trying to protect, we have to have some kind of distraction because it's part of a story and it's going to lead to something else. And then the next match is another distraction and that's going to lead to something else. And on and on and on and on and on. And it's just like conveyor belt booking that goes nowhere, okay? And it gets to a point where not only are you not invested in near falls, not only are you not invested in moves, you're not invested in matches, all right? Because you're just sitting there and you got your fist on your face and, you know, you're like, okay, where's the distraction? Where's somebody going to show up? You're looking for that rather than investing in the match, and it's friggin' ridiculous, and it gets old after a while. You know, there was interference in the Lashley match tonight. There was interference in the Owens match. You know, there was interference in the final match, you know, and it's just on and on and on and on and on. And it just gets and it gets tiresome. And, you know, it was something that I was hoping would go away under Triple H booking. But, you know, now that I think about it, I probably should not have expected it to go away because if you watched NXT before they flipped to 2.0, there were a lot of distractions in those matches too. You know, if you watch, especially when they went to 2 hours, you know, because WWE is of this philosophy that we have to do distractions. So, you know, whatever happens leads to, you know, the parties involved leads to their match or leads to whatever, you know, they're doing in that story. And it just gets tiresome. So let me end my rant and just say, yeah, I wish, because if you do it less, it means more when it actually happens. And WWE just hasn't figured that out.
Justin, back to you for anything else.
Yeah, it's the age-old rule. When you try to protect everybody, nobody gets over. And it's, there's no variety where it's like, okay, we're going to do these stupid finishes, but at least it's going to be reserved for, like, main event level. It's going to be the Roman stuff, the Brock stuff. But it's just like, do we need a distraction finish with Austin Theory versus Kevin Owens? I mean, neither one of them is actually in the actual program right now for a title. I don't understand why that match needed it. And then it was something like last week, like when it was Dominic Mysterio versus Edge, they did DQ finish. I thought they could have done something like maybe Rhea Ripley hands Dominic a pair of brass knuckles and maybe he knocks out Edge and gets the pin and maybe it's a little tainted, but there's a finish instead of having people invest in a 15, 20-minute main event and get a DQ finish. Like I said, at this point, I don't know what's worse, a DQ finish or a distraction finish. And then tonight what made it worse was it was babyfaces doing it. I mean, I was supposed to get behind Johnny Gargano. He just runs out there and interferes in a match for no reason. I mean, even if he wanted to get payback from last week, why not to wait to after the match? Isn't that what a babyface would do? So it just – it dragged down the show for me. I felt like overall it was a typical Paul Levesque show. It advanced storylines. They're building up to the Extreme Rules. The in-ring action was good for the most part. I actually feel like I'm the only one who liked the main event tonight. But I felt it was over, but it just brought the show down when it's like I'm counting, like, man, this is like the fourth interference finish. Last thing I want to talk about, and this has been beat like a dead horse, but I spoke about it last week. I think the worst I can do at Extreme Rules is put that belt on Bayley because, it's been 2 months. He gets the legacy star reaction where they're polite to her, but this group is not over. It's not working. And I don't know if they think, oh, if we put the belts on all three of them, you know, that will get them over. But it's just not working. And like you guys touched on beginning of the show, everybody was excited about Bayley returning. And, you know, that was one of the biggest talking points coming out of SummerSlam besides the Last Man Standing match. And, you know, it just kind of goes back to what a lot of people may forget. This heel character was not over pre-pandemic. It really started to find itself during the pandemic. But for whatever reason, this character just does not connect with a live audience. And I remember before the pandemic, and I was seeing after the pandemic, and they don't have a lot of heels, I guess, so there's no way they can flip her. And they already invested into this heel group. But I'm thinking maybe Becky Lynch gets involved at Extreme Rules and costs Bayley the match since they injured her in storyline. But this group is just, and it's been 2 months. And we get a what chance in the middle of the promo. And we still, like Frank mentioned, we still don't know what their motivation is or why they're called damage control or why we should care. And, you know, they got a lot of screen time. I mean, to be in the main event and to get a 10-minute long segment and be one of the less overacts on the show, I'm interested to see, and I want you guys to talk from this. Paul Levesque pushes something. Vince is stubborn with it, or is he open to changing or course correcting things when it isn't working? This has been 2 months. I guess they can give it another month. But what do you guys think about that? And what do you guys feel about what you can feel from him right now about changing course, correcting things, or does he have some Vince McMahon in him where this is his idea, he's going to push it to it works or it doesn't work?
I don't know yet. I just don't. I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, you know, the way he ran NXT, but I mean, things are just different now because he doesn't have to answer directly to Vince McMahon with everything he does in NXT. That was always every interpretation we had of what he did in NXT was he's doing things he thinks he can get away with that Vince wouldn't do, but there's things he might want to do that he knows he can't get away with. You know, what we're seeing so far is, you know, there's some favorites that he likes. He likes Dexter Lumis. He likes Johnny Gargano, on and on. You know, there's aspect, you know, Tommaso Ciampa wants to give more to. But booking wise, does he adjust and change when he perhaps get some feedback, or maybe just someone brings it up to him and goes, you know, we're doing a lot of this. He's, oh, yeah, you're right. let's, you know, I don't want to be like Vince. I want to adjust. Oh, things aren't really working with damage control. You know, we haven't done enough to establish their character. Does he go, you know what? Let's put some time and elbow grease into some video packages. Let's tell the story of why they're linked up. Let's have them do some, you know, selfie videos of what they do in their free time and how obnoxious they are out on the street or at a restaurant or at the gym, and start to give some layers to the characters so people want to boo them and understand what their bond is. I mean, like, to me, my suggestion for damage control, for instance, would be to do that, to have them play videos of them being obnoxious in public, somehow, some way, make that work. And have them be, you know, like Bailey can be the person at the restaurant who makes life miserable for the server. You know, they can be obnoxious at the gym and make fun of people and, you know, whatever. I mean, I'm just spitballing here, but like, just give us, you know, and they can be proud of that. And yeah. So anyway, Frank, I just said a few things there, but I don't think it's beyond hope. But I think with Paul Levesque, the idea is he at a point, and that's what Justin's getting at, is are we at a point where it's like, yeah, it's time to take a step back and go, all right, I know I was really busy with this Logan Paul stuff and maybe with Bray Wyatt and whatever. Well, there's other things going on that need his attention and maybe need to be changed a little bit. Match finishes, damage control are two examples of it. And I'll be watching. I'm interested to see if he can adjust and improve when something isn't quite going right or something people are complaining about something.
Yeah, I think we need a little time to see, you know, what he picks up on that isn't working and, you know, actually makes the adjustments. I think it's a little early to determine whether or not, you know, he has the Vince mentality of sticking with something, even if it isn't working. We'll see. Justin brought up something really interesting about Bailey, though, that I hadn't thought about. He brought up Bailey, you know, not really being over before the pandemic, and it got more over during the pandemic. That's interesting because really the meat of Bailey's run came without a crowd, if you think about it. Like, her heel character really didn't take off until, you know, we were in the Performance Center and then eventually the Thunderdome. So how do we even know that that character was over? You know, we only knew it was over because they were giving her TV time and, you know, she was doing her thing with Sasha and everything like that. And when she got hurt, they were still in the Thunderdome at that point. So, you know, this heel bit that she's doing might not actually be working. It might not have ever worked. Who knows? You know, they might have abandoned ship had we not gone into a pandemic. So it's something to really think about. You know, as far as Bailey is concerned, but yeah. You know, I am a little more optimistic that if something isn't working, I think Paul will, he's not going to drop things right away like Vince did, but he will very subtly, you know, find a way out of it in a way that makes sense and isn't so abrupt to us, the viewer. You know, so we'll just have to see how that happens.
Yeah. All right, Justin, I appreciate the call as always.
No problem. This has been a heck of a show, guys. You've done a good job. Plan on listening to the rest of the show, especially the VIP shows later this week. So, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Have a good night.
Speaking of which, we've had some fun on our VIP podcast this weekend with some best of content. For instance, my Wade Keller hotline. We've been running the PW Torch VIP podcast vault as a regular series here for the better part of a couple of years, or yeah, over a year now. And we're doing 18 years ago, because this coincides with our earliest podcast going back 18 years. And so the September 2nd, 2004 Wade Keller hotline we just put up, and the headline is Undertaker Dress Code Controversy. And also Edge injured against Chris Jericho. Michael Cole disses the state of SmackDown, plus some praise for Kane, and WWE breaks kayfabe. That's a 25-minute news update, the Wade Keller hotline, and it's from 18 years ago this month, and we're marching through those archive shows. We're also running The Fix with Todd Martin from the beginning. So for newer VIP members, they get to hear, you know, one of our signature shows on the VIP lineup from the very beginning. And we just put up the August 12th show. I'm trying to catch up, so we're a little more in sync with the months here. And we actually have a few more coming up this week that'll help us get closer. But the headline was, what does the NXT sellout mean and where does the brand go from here? That was 7 years ago. You know, we're talking about what Triple H is doing and all that. So that's cool. Plus, we reviewed Raw, Triple Mania, Tough Enough, and Todd also reviewed the Mid-Atlantic Memories DVD. There's some good evergreen content here besides, you know, the fascinating time capsule of 7 years ago analysis. His book reviews and DVD reviews are pretty evergreen, and so that's fun. So anyway, you just brought up VIP content. I wanted to bring up that we are running some cool archives from different eras right now. Okay, Frank, let's wrap up relatively quickly with just a couple emails, and then we'll sign off. We've gone long here. JB from Detroit said, we had yet another cop-out finish tonight with Riddle distracting Rollins in the U.S. title match. It started to become an alarming trend that Paul Levesque's booking matches seemingly advertised as big and of significance are so often sacrificed for goofy finishes so everyone is, quote, protected. In reality, I think big match builds are being devalued, and it's particularly harmful in something as important as U.S. title match. If Levesque's goal is to truly make the secondary titles feel higher in importance on the shows, while Roman is part-time and holding both belts, the finish to tonight's U.S. title match actively works against that goal, in my opinion. As always, love the shows and go VIP. Frank, I think JB makes a good point here in that I think it adds – it's worse when it's a title match. Like – you know, Drew against Solo Sikoa, what does it matter if one beats the other? Well, I mean, it matters, right? But it's not a title match. And so when you're building, I mean, they did a great job making that seem like a big deal. You know, they advertised it all week. It was prominent on their website, social media. We had full ring entrances. We had the formal ring introductions. I was just thinking while the match was starting, this has a big fight feel, and they're kicking off the show with it, but it has almost like a UFC main event vibe. And then they fight for 15 minutes, and then we get a cornball, you know, pro wrestling screw finish. It's just, it undercuts the titles also, not just, you know, the matches. So I thought JB had a good point there emphasizing, you know, that it can undercut the value of titles when matches end like that, and they just move on.
Yeah, I mean, I ranted about this before, so I'm not going to repeat anything, but the title matches is a really good point because what it does is it ruins your trust as a fan of getting into these matches when your mentality is, they're running this on TV. Well, you know, what's going to happen? There's going to be a DQ or there's going to be, someone's going to get involved, and it just takes down, you know, it takes down the value of it. And it also, it takes down the value of the winner, especially with the winner being a babyface. Like usually it's the heels winning via distraction, not the babyfaces. So yeah. Not to repeat anything I mentioned earlier.
Yeah. All right. Zach in Texas emailed on the same topic. First of all, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Raw opens with a great match that's ruined by a distraction finish. I thought Paul Levesque would have more courage to put one top star, not named Roman, over another top star. I guess it was wrong. But what I really want to talk about, and I'm glad we're getting to this, is the announcement that Survivor Series will feature War Games. It's certainly an upgrade over brand supremacy, but let's be honest. War Games in NXT always felt like an imitation of the real thing. They'd use plunder and high spots, especially off the top of the cage into the ring, to make up for the lack of grittiness and blood. Triple H made it clear the no blood policy isn't getting lifted, so I expect much the same at Survivor Series. With blood and guts, AEW mostly restored War Games to its former glory. Now it feels like WWE is turning it into tag team Hell in a Cell, ironically without the roof. So I'm glad that he has said it's not going to be brand versus brand. Sean Radican pointed that out to me by text. Because that would have been dumb. You know, the last thing I want is brand supremacy said over and over again during the month of November. And so that's good. I'm happy for War Games being brought to WWE. I don't need blood for it to feel intense and violent, but I get where Zach is coming from. But I don't know how many people are going to be stuck in the late 80s when it comes to their, or 90s, when it comes to their expectations for War Games. As long as it's booked effectively, it's still, from as a concept match, it's pretty cool. It's survived multiple generations or been brought back after generations away. There's been variations of it. So I like this because it also means we're not going to get, you know, Lashley against Gunther, you know, with a cop-out finish, of course, or, you know, or some, there's going to be some other title change to avoid that match yet. we're not going to have, you know, Roman against Roman or whatever the heck they were going to do if that didn't happen. And we're not going to get the Raw Women's Champ against the SmackDown Women's Champ just because of the time of the calendar year with, just the idea that it's a dream card because it's champ versus champ is like, it's a fun thing for like Pro Wrestling Illustrated back in the day to write about, but it just interrupted the booking. And then the whole brand supremacy stuff was nonsense. So to me, War Games, I mean, I think it's a good business move. I think it gives Survivor Series a new identity, and it fits, you know, Survivor Series. It's not an elimination take. It's a progressive entrance cage, double cage match. But I think the novelty will help draw viewers to Peacock. That's going to make Peacock, NBC Universal, and WWE's partners happy that there's another sign that Paul Levesque is making changes that are increasing interest in some of these shows year over year. Frank.
Yeah. Overall, net positive that the War Games name is being attached to Survivor Series. I am reinvested now in Survivor Series as opposed to the brand supremacy nonsense that nobody gave a rat's ass about for the past 6 years. Nobody in their right mind, except the one person. When I went to Survivor Series 2018 in LA, right, on a layover, I sat next to somebody, and there was somebody cheering for SmackDown. I'm like, did they get to you or something? Like, what are you doing? You don't need to cheer for one show. It's not necessary. Anyway, I digress. Now, it's a net positive. I am with Zach, though, in that a lot of the WWE versions of War Games did feel more spot-festy-like. Rather than being more storyline driven than some of the old WCW War Games matches. Maybe I'm a little partial because I reviewed a couple of War Games matches for Then and Now recently. I did one for Wrestle War, and then Todd and I did one, I think it was last December. We did the 96 War Games. So I felt like those were more storyline driven, but I'm going to wait and see. I'm going to wait and see what happens. It's, like I said, I think the whole Survivor Series concept has kind of lost its luster through the years because we see six-man tags constantly on TV. We see eight-man tags. So the whole novelty of people teaming up together just wasn't what it was in the late 80s and throughout most of the 90s. You know, people will be teaming up here, obviously, but in a War Games environment, it does make it feel big. So, you know, final answer, happy that the brand supremacy is gone, looking forward to it, you know, we'll see what happens with the matches.
Very good. Frank, go ahead and tell people how they can follow you on social media.
Absolutely. So on Twitter, you can follow me at Frank Pettiani. That's at Frank, P-E-T-E-A-N-I. Always hit or miss if I tweet about wrestling. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But I guarantee you if I cook a good meal on the grill or in the oven, you'll see pictures of it, as I did yesterday with my wings. So if you enjoy good cuisine, follow me on Twitter.
Excellent. And follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller. And follow our brand at PW Torch. Be sure you're checking out pwtorch.com every day for the latest news, live TV and pay-per-view coverage, special features, and more. And if you haven't yet, now that this show is over, go ahead and subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast. It is free. It's our third major podcast RSS feed or series besides the red logo and blue logo Wade Keller shows. The PW Torch Daily Cast has a different host with a different theme every day of the week. And last night, Greg Parks was joined by Andrew Socek, and they talked a lot about AEW and what's coming up Wednesday night at Arthur Ashe Stadium with live calls with that signature show, long-running Sunday Daily Cast called Wrestling Night in America, hosted by Greg Park. So check that out. It's free. Just search PW Torch to subscribe to that feed. It is free. There's really cool stuff in there, including our latest show that's been added to the lineup, which is Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure, a WWE-focused show that drops Saturday nights on the Daily Cast lineup. I've been plugging it all week, but it's worth just listening to. It is highly acclaimed among VIP members who felt they were part of a cool exclusive group. We are now sharing it with everybody. VIP members still get it ad-free and earlier in the day, but we are offering it to everybody now on Saturday nights for now, so check that out. We also have the PW Torch 90s Passcast, where we go back 30 years to the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter from 30 years ago that week. And go through what was in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter that week. Somebody had mentioned earlier, who was it? Who mentioned back issues. One of our callers talked about how much he enjoys the back issues.
Actually, that was me.
I was
talking about him in conjunction with reviewing the shows for Then and Now. So.
Ah, cool. Well, yeah, I remember that Frank fella. He was a good caller. Patrick Moynihan and Alex McDonald do a great job. It's really fun listening to them riff on things that I wrote back then. Sometimes, you know, I stand by them, and other – well, I just have to stand by them, but I don't run from what I wrote. But it's fun to listen back to some of my, you know, predictions on who would be stars and who wouldn't be, and my take on things. So, and the latest episode, by the way, is covering the January 10th, 1992 issue number 191 of The Torch. It was so young back then. And it included coverage of Ric Flair winning the WWF title for the second time, plus a review of Clash of the Champions 20 and Road Warrior Hawk gone from WWE and more. Almost 2 hours of analysis of that week in wrestling as covered by the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. So such cool stuff on there. I can't emphasize enough. It's worth your effort to enter PW Torch on your podcast app right now and download and subscribe to it. Frank, always a blast having you on. Thanks so much for joining me today.
I appreciate you having me, Wade, and enjoy the Vikings game, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
All I'm doing is reading into your tone there and trying to think, does that mean we won? But I'm not going to think about it anymore. Thank you, Frank. I will enjoy the game either way because, you know, NFL is fun, especially when your team is undefeated. Well, at least they were before tonight. We'll see if they keep that up. Thanks, Frank. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Take care.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.